In 1942, over 100,000 Japanese and Americans of Japanese descent living along the West Coast were forcibly relocated to internment camps in the wake of the attack on Pearl Harbor and the United States' declaration of war with Japan. Born and raised in California, Gran Ishikawa was one of the American citizens moved to an internment camp. In November of 1942, however, Mr. Ishikawa was able to volunteer for the U.S. Army and serve his country in the Allied Translations and Interpretation Service. In 1944 and 1945, he participated in the Philippine Liberation and was one of 3,000 Japanese Americans who served in the Asia-Pacific War. This past year, Mr. Ishikawa and his fellow veterans of the 100th Battalion, 442nd RCT, and the MIS were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal for their service. Mr. Ishikawa himself accepted the medal on behalf of the MIS. In this episode, Noriko Sanafuji, a curatorial assistant here at the museum, interviewed Gran Ishikawa to discuss his experience of being moved to an internment camp, joining the Army, and proudly serving his country.
I was born in 1919. That makes me pretty old today. My folks were farmers, and they wanted me to help out, but I asked my father if I can go to the university, because I wanted a college education. We come from a very poor family, so he said, if you want to go to college, fine, but you'll have to find your own way of financing your college education. So I had to work for my room and board, and after 4 years, I got my degree. I went to school at University of California in Berkeley. I got my degree in accounting, but nobody would hire me as an accountant, so I wanted to be a college-educated farmer with my father. I got started. We found a very good lease. Then the war started. Well, my father figured he's going to be interned, but I'm an American citizen. I had no idea that I'm going to be interned, but when my father was interned, I was interned too. The whole family was interned, so...
You graduated in May of 1941, yes, which is right before Pearl Harbor.
Yes, right.
So that puts you in a difficult spot.
Japan bombed Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. So I had just graduated from college and just got started farming. I had a very nice, attractive lease on a farm, 80-acre farm. I bought some equipment like a truck, tractor, all the equipment I had to buy. I was intending to just stay there, but I got picked up as if I was a non-U.S. citizen, a Japanese resident. But
can you elaborate on what do you mean by picked up?
Picked up? The Army, U.S. Army, gave us orders, everybody of Japanese ancestry, to assemble at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And we were taken to a temporary internment camp in Turlock, California. We got on a train. We all assembled at the train station. Mm-hmm. With only what we can carry. No other bag. We had to get rid of all the other stuff that we had. And so we were actually evacuated from our home in California.
After the assembly center, you went into a... War Relocation Authority. So you were in prison.
Along
with your family.
It was a concentration camp.
Which is everybody
of Japanese ancestry.
If I remember, you were in Gila River.
Arizona. That's right. Arizona. Mm-hmm. It was a desert. They built this camp in a desert, and it was hot.
So from the behind barbed wire, you have volunteered to fight for the military.
Yes.
And can you tell me a little bit about the process?
Yes. When I first picked up and as a alien Japanese American, they considered me to be a alien person, because otherwise they wouldn't have picked me up. They picked everybody of American citizens that are born in America, but were all picked up. I felt that how can I prove that I am a loyal American rather than a pro-Japanese young student, rather graduate? Well, the one way to prove that is to join the Army and you fight for your country. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to prove, join the army somehow, but we were reclassified as, I think 4C.
4C.
It means enemy alien.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't join the army even if we wanted to. And then came along a request, a requirement for more Japanese American linguists to fight in the Pacific side, because they were really short of linguists. So a recruiting team came to camp, and I felt that I really didn't qualify, but I'm going to try anyway. So I knew that one of the fellows on that team. So anyway, I went to see him, and he took out some books. I went to Japanese school, and during every Saturday, my father sent me to Japanese school. So I knew a little Japanese, but it was enough for me to qualify. And so he said, "You want to join the army? You can join the army." And so I ran home and got my parents' permission. Ran back and said, "Yeah, I'll join the army." That was in November 1942. I joined the army as a private. And when they sent us to Minnesota, Minneapolis, it was November, it was cold. We were all in summer clothing. And when I swore in as a private, and they gave us the army uniform, the nice wool, warm uniform, and you put it on, a great change. I felt very different. I felt like I am now an American. It made a big difference in my life.
But you were in the U.S. Army Military Intelligence Service.
Yes.
Which is known as the MIS.
Yes, MIS, yes. We got sent to the school.
Right.
In Camp Savage at, mm-hmm. In Minnesota, and we graduated. It was a 6-month school, and I've never studied so hard in my life. I mean, it was rough school, and after 6 months, we graduated, and we got sent to Camp Shelby for our basic training. And so we trained with the 442 in Camp Shelby. And then after we finished our basic training, I and a bunch of them got sent to Australia, Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
We got assigned to ADIS, Allied Translator and Interpreter Service, that was in Brisbane. And I stayed with them all the way through. From Brisbane, around June 1945, we moved to Manila,
mm-hmm.
and then the war ended with Japan. So after that, we got involved in rounding up troops in the Philippines, and then we went to Japan for our occupation duties.
I heard about this incident that Lieutenant Ichikawa, you had over 250 armed Japanese soldiers to surrender.
Yeah, I had just gotten a field commission. Me and maybe about 50 other Japanese Americans, we got our field commission as second lieutenants. And so, in other words, we had finally arrived. When we graduated our language school in 6 months, all of the Japanese Americans, they were promoted to T5, which means corporal. All the Caucasian Americans, the white Americans who went to the same school, when they graduated, they became second lieutenants. And really, it's utter discrimination, but, you know, we stood it because, we just picked up they initially considered us pro-Japan, but that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when we got our commission, then we were level again. The whole playing field was level for us. So it was a great move on the part of the Army to promote a bunch of us to second lieutenant. Troops. Oh, yeah. And this is right at the end of the war. And one of our mission was to round up the Japanese soldiers that are surrendering. And we usually get word that there's a small group here, usually about 5-10 people, soldiers, surrendering. The Japanese troops had a hard time surrendering because surrender is not in the Japanese Army vocabulary. They don't surrender. They'd rather commit suicide than surrender. And all of a sudden the war ended. The emperor surrendered. And the emperor has sent word out for all the Japanese troops to surrender. And so they had a rough time surrendering. And usually we went out with a truck, picked the surrendering soldiers up, and then we got word saying about 200 soldiers, 250 soldiers are surrendering. So we went out there with about 10 trucks. I was a second lieutenant at that time. I just got my bars. And the commander of that troop, those 10 truck, was a captain. Mm-hmm. So he was, you know, above me. So I was second in command. And we went out after these to the area that they said that they're going to be. And we went to that area, and out in the field, there's nobody around. There's no troops. So we all wondering, where in the heck are the troops, the surrendering troops? And then in the distance, there's some trees, sort of forest over there. And I saw a white flag over there. And so I'm the linguist. I'm the interpreter. I'm the one who speaks Japanese. So I told everybody to stay put. And I start walking towards the center of the field. And on the other side, two men start walking toward me. One with a white flag saying surrendering. We met in the middle, and the other guy, the Japanese, was a lieutenant colonel, and I think he was shocked to see me, a Japanese-American that spoke to him in Japanese, who was an officer. And I think it really jolted him to see me, but he didn't say anything. But, you know, his attitude was, convince me to surrender. So I had to talk him into it, and he finally gave me his sword, saying, you know, everybody who can see that is a gesture, he's surrendering to me. So he went back and told his troops to come out, and they're all disarmed, and they all sat down in the little open space there. And our first mission was to feed them, because they're all hungry. Usually we pick them up, they're very hungry. So we had these K rations, and we passed that out. And then nobody was eating. So I asked one of the soldiers, aren't you hungry? And he says, yes, I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you eat? And so he said, we're waiting for our commanding officer to eat. And mm-hmm. then I suddenly realized that this was not an ordinary unit. It was a special tokotai. Mm. Then I realized how close I came to being ambushed. and there's only 10 of us, you know, right. 10 trucks and 10, about 12 of us all together. And they could have, you know, tore us apart and killed us all. Uh-huh. But because I was there as a linguist, mm-hmm. I was able to talk to him in his language. Mm-hmm. He surrendered, and if it was anybody else, mm-hmm. Say an American officer that went over there to try to talk to him into surrendering, not knowing Japanese, I think would have been a little bit difficult. Right, right. So
on October 5th, 2010, President Barack Obama signed into public law Senate Bill 1055, a bill granting the Congressional Gold Medal collectively and individually to more than 19,000 second-generation Japanese-American veterans of the 100th Infantry Battalion, the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, and the Military Intelligence Service in recognition of their dedicated service during World War II. The Congressional Gold Medal is bestowed by the United States Congress, and along with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, is the highest civilian honor given in national appreciation for distinguished achievement and contributions. So once again, congratulations to Mr. Ichikawa as a Congressional Gold Medal awardee. We know how you and your comrades who received the Congressional Gold Medal feel about finally being officially acknowledged for your patriotism, but how do you think this accomplishment will affect the lives of future generations of Japanese Americans and Americans?
Well, I think they would be very proud. My son, I brought my son to those things, and I got two more of these. I'm going to give one to my son, I'll give one to my daughter, to remind them that their father is the one that got this medal for their service during World War II, because this is the highest civilian award that anybody can get, and it's the ultimate decoration, the medal that shows our loyalty to America, and our children should be very, very proud the fact that we got the Congressional Gold Medal. Nobody, not everybody gets that. Mm-hmm. Not everybody who serves in the service gets that, but in this case, it was the Japanese Americans who served in World War II while some of their families were in internment camp. Now, we had a tremendous background to be able to qualify for a Congressional Gold Medal. Very proud of the fact that we got this ultimate recognition from the Congress and the President.
Thanks to Mr. Grant Ichikawa and Noriko Senofuji for the interview. For the History Explorer podcast, this is Matt Ringelstetter. Join us again next month as we take another look behind the scenes here at the National Museum of American History. Podcast made possible by a grant from the Verizon Foundation.